How are you getting on? And welcome to another episode of The B2B Brand. My name is Liam Maroney. I'm your host. And on this podcast, I talk to marketing leaders in the B2B tech space about all things brand. And on today's episode, I am so happy to be joined by the incredible Casey Jenkins, who is the SVP of marketing at Sendoso. Casey has a really interesting background coming from both the B2C tech world and the B2B tech world, so we get a really strong perspective of the differences between those two when it comes to brand. It was such an interesting conversation. Thank you so much for joining, and let's get into it. Casey, it is so lovely to see you. Thank you for joining. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
I am excited to chat. So let's get right into it. And let's start as broad and big as we possibly can. The whole purpose of this podcast is really around talking into brand within the B2B context. And I think it's brand is possibly one of the most inconsistent things across the entire industry. You ask, how important is brand? You ask, how do you measure brand? You ask, where does brand fit? And it's a different answer in every time. So I would love to start with your perspective. Brand in B2B, what's your take on this?
So I think I have a potentially atypical view of this. I don't divide my team by like brand is a thing over here with people who only think about that by themselves. And then you know, there's demand over here, or however other companies seem to be segmenting this. For me, brand starts with who are you selling to? What do they care about? What will resonate with those people? And who are you at your core, the business? What do you care about and want to represent? And what is the connection between those two? I don't think it works to try and cordon brand off as like creative people that just like sit in the corner like a little elf workshop within your organization. I think you have to infuse it through everything that you do. And brand is also not just marketing. It should be infused across the whole company. And so I think about this from the very beginning of like, who am I bringing onto my team? Who are we hiring? How do they embody our values as a brand, as a company in the world? What do we want to come through when we show up in the world and when we show up for our buyers and our customers? And so I don't like brand to me is not just what colors go on our website. It's, you know, like it's the foundational layer of, do we show up in us in a way that centralizes humanness in everything that we do? Are we a curious and soulful group of people, you know, that care about putting at Sendoso, we care about real connection. That's something that I value and have sought in every company that I've worked for. And so it starts with like the foundation that helps you make decisions about what type of content do we produce? You know, like what type of an experience do you want to craft for people that we're engaging with? How do we want our people to show up in the world? Are they kind? Are they thoughtful? Are they leaving value? Are they, you know, helpful? Do they derive joy from helping others? I heard something yesterday from our head of product, Cody, that made me so deeply happy. And it was that he got on the phone with a potential collaborator, partner, another brand. And they said, I don't know how to say this, but you all just, there's something that feels really, really good about all of you. Like you all have something that feels really good going on. It was like, you know, vibes, you have good vibes. That's brand.
I love that. I love that. I want to kind of question something because I think I love that description, and I think you can easily identify with what that feels like because you can think of companies who reflect that really quickly and you can think of ones who definitely don't. There's this sort of pervasive myth in B2B that, you know, B2B buyers, they don't care about emotion. They're rational people. It matters whether the features are there and whether it meets the requirements. From what you've seen,
How untrue is that? And how do you see that materializing?
So I sort of, I began my career, I became a real marketer, you know, like Pinocchio in Roku. And Roku is consumer tech, you know, so we were selling to, grandmothers, we're selling to, just your everyday person who, at the time did not understand what we were doing. OTT streaming, not a thing really in the vernacular. And so I learned there the importance of deep customer research and understanding who you're selling to, what they care about, what language they speak. And so I ended up being brought into technical companies after that, because I think, and they couldn't articulate this when they hired me, and it was a battle every time, but they needed someone outside of the tech bubble, outside of the engineering bubble, outside of the our product is so fantastic and we're amazing and we're, you know, changing the way the internet works, blah, blah, blah. They need someone to connect back to the soul and the people that they're selling to and craft something bigger around it, because you cannot just sell, we're a content delivery network that's really good. Our tech is great. Our engineers are really smart. That doesn't work fundamentally. If you strip away all of the layers of so what? So what? What kind of people are you? Why is this different? Why is this interesting? Why should I care? Why does this align with my values and who I embody as a person and as a decision maker in my company? And at Fastly, I was brought in to build a community, to connect with local developers, to build local regional programs, to build a nonprofit program. We took our values and we lifted them up. We set boundaries around who we do and do not work with. You know, people who are kind and have integrity and are trustworthy, not people who are doing bad things with technology or, you know, misusing technology. And we sort of crafted an ethos of building a trustworthy, kinder internet and working with the people who tried to prioritize that. None of that has really anything to do with and we rebranded the whole company from a disruptive CDN or content delivery network to something entirely different. It was an edge cloud platform that was humanizing the internet and making it more trustworthy. That works for a reason. That's important for a reason.
It's so interesting. You talk about the bubble and trying to make sure that they weren't falling in and bringing in people who were thinking within that bubble. I kind of want to talk about that for a second. I guess from their perspective and from your perspective, what is that bubble? What is the problem with the sort of tech way of thinking about how tech sells itself beyond the obvious?
I think tech is inherently a little bit insular, and also just out of necessity, when you're building something and you're trying to innovate and move fast, you're just very immersed in that. And I think also in most of the companies that I worked for that are innovating quickly, that are tech SaaS, or engineering focused companies, we get really stuck in this idea that we can hack everything, that there's a shortcut to everything, that there's some way to manipulate everything, and sort of get around all of the actually human essential elements of buying something. And we even forget the human elements entirely. So when oftentimes, and I still consult a bit and go into companies where, they're following some playbook, or they think that their product is so incredible and they've been so sort of ostrich head down in their product that they're not seeing it through anyone else's eyes. And they think, that they don't need to explain it, that it's magnificence is just, you know, like obvious to everyone, and it's going to sell itself. Or you get the tech B2B folks who think we just need to like you and I have talked about this. We just need more demo buttons, or we just need to like, you know, manipulate it so they can't get here and they can't get there. And like, you know, we'll get them to where that we want them to go. We'll force it this way. And that doesn't work because that's not the way that people work. And so if you're only thinking about the tech and the product and like the back end of things and hacking shit, you forget that you actually have to reconcile humans and how humans work. And there's actually emotion involved in that. And there's a lot of trickier stuff involved in that you cannot hack.
It's really interesting that even on just the last few minutes, you mentioned OTT streaming, you mentioned edge cloud, you mentioned CDNs. And I think there's this thing in tech where there's certain things that become very popularized. Like positioning is obviously a huge thing in tech about who am I going to be? Where do I fit into the world? Which category am I in? There's the trying to define and create your own category. There's the I don't fit in this one, I fit in that one. So there's a lot of, I think we think about identity through the how do I define myself and how do others categorize me? Where do you see brand alongside that? Like, do they complement each other? Is it going against it? Does it sit on top? Like, how does that sense of identity in the MarTech landscape meet brand, which is the emotional how people think and feel about you?
I think they go together. I think, I guess so. Like all of the companies that I worked at, I have been part of crafting who are we, where do we sit, and how do we articulate that, and how do we make that resonate in a way that's gonna land with the folks that we're trying to sell to. And that involves talking to a lot of those people, you know, and like getting their feedback and like actually working with the people that you're trying to sell to. So like, I don't think there's any way to decouple the two things. You can't just be like, we want to build X category, like, cause we think that sounds really cool. And decouple that from the brand elements of what do we stand for, you know, like what do we care about, how are we making a difference, and like who are we selling to, what do they care about. So like, for example, Roku streaming player, streaming stick, you know, like I helped launch the streaming stick. There was no streaming stick. It was barely streaming. And Apple was cornering the market of like techies, you know, like people who were like on the cutting edge, wanted a really pretty thing, wanted, you know, to be the first people to try, you know, streaming and to opine on it and to like go, you know, influence everyone. We were like, great, you have that market. We're going to go corner the people who don't know what the hell this is. And to do that, we couldn't get all like stuck in like the tech of what we were doing. We actually had to simplify everything so insanely. Like our whole business was built around simplifying everything. It was like, you know, we're testing over and over again, like how many buttons, how many steps, you know, like how many things on the screen, strip it all. We just stripped things back constantly. Same on the website, like strip it out, clean it up, make it so like easy to understand. And then, you know, I came in trying to think about how do we reach these people. And we did a whole bunch of testing and, you know, looking at where do these people go? How do they get their information? And it went against everything I knew as a marketer. And what we ended up doing was radio ads. These people were listening to the radio. They were listening to morning shows. They were listening to sports games and billboards. And they were driving back and forth to work. And we hit them on both of those. And then we did a lot of like local, like, you know, get into local publications with like very simple ads that were not talking about our tech or not talking about how like, you know, tech savvy and cool and tricky and amazing this thing was. It was like resonating on a human emotional level. So like, you know, we built that market and curved that out, but it was all tied together really closely, like brand and positioning and messaging and and category tight alignment.
That's such an interesting idea. I know I love the simplicity part. You mentioned earlier that when you were at Roku, you had market research that helped inform a lot of the things that you were doing, which I think for a lot of B2B tech is a fictional idea. The idea that you would have access to this is just really difficult. I guess before we get to how you translate that lack of research in the tech world, what types of things, like what real big insights came from that research? Like where was it coming from and what was it actually telling you that changed your thoughts and feelings about what you were doing?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think, yes, it this does not typically exist. This function does not exist in most B2B tech companies, which is sad. We had an incredible like team of researchers and data scientists and people who were just exceptional at this. We had our own little, you know, like places where we could mock up actual like retail experiences and watch people shop and watch them, you know, like pick up and look at the different boxes we had designed. We pulled all sorts of data around, you know, where the people were that we were trying to sell to, what types of hobbies, what types of things they cared about, what were they watching, what were they listening to, what were they influenced by, you know, what sort of things do these communities do, and like buying habits, you know, and like you name it, like I had it. We had riches of you know, like data. I think it can get overwhelming in terms of what you should do with it. But what we used it for was really just like, okay, we have a lot of assumptions and we have a lot of people in here who come from different backgrounds, but a lot of us came from like tech backgrounds. And so we would make these assumptions that something needed to be cooler or more complex or like, you know, a certain like buying experience was like flashier or cooler. And then we would realize that it just absolutely didn't land with the people we were selling to. And it was just such a good way to check yourself consistently, like, oh no, we should be doing all of these different, you know, buying across all these different marketing channels and like investing here and here because that's what you should do. And it's like, that's not what our audience is. They're not there, you know, like, and you know, I would never have bought radio ads if we hadn't done this type of research. And we would have very different, I mean, our boxes, just the packaging was like fine-tuned the nth degree based on what we saw people doing with those boxes and the feedback that we got. And like, you know, at a certain point we just put a big angry bird, you know, like on one of the boxes because that was like what was attracting people at the time. So like we were tweaking things all the time. Like this is an ongoing process. It does never stop. And I think we don't do that in B2B tech. Like we sometimes we'll do like customer survey or like we'll talk to a few customers or we'll like, you know, put a homepage or landing page in front of some people. But we're not in this habit of like consistently gut checking our assumptions against the actual reality of how our buyers interact with those assumptions.
So how then in the tech world, in the B2B tech world, do you overcome some of the bias that you naturally have? Because I think we're really guilty of this in MarTech, where we think like, I'm a marketer, therefore I know how all marketers buy, and I'm going to like do the kind of marketing. And then even worse, we talk about this on LinkedIn as though it's now like a universal fact that the way MarTech buyers buy is the same way that FinTech buyers buy, which is completely untrue. So how do you not do the kind of marketing that you think is good when you don't have access to research?
It's really tricky. I think that, you know, the best place you can start is by really building strong relationships with your own customers so you can go to them and ask them for feedback. I used our customers to gut check everything I did at Fastly because I am not a developer, an engineer, or a CTO. And so oftentimes, you know, something that verbiage we thought would land or an idea we thought would land, I had to go test it against someone. And I did a lot of like building little pockets of folks that I knew would tell me the truth, you know, and would be brutally honest with me, and building strong relationships with those people so that I could go and say, you know, when we decided to pivot from you know, calling ourselves a content delivery network to calling ourselves an edge cloud platform, for example. I led that from the marketing side. It was like a full company endeavor, but it was, I put a bet on it. And I did that because we knew we were going against a giant company, Akamai, that had sort of cornered this idea of content delivery, and it was antiquated. And so every time we went into a deal, no one believed that we could do what we could do, because in their head, content delivery network could not do that. And it was in a box, and we had to get ourselves out of the box. And so, you know, we were trying to go up market and sell to really, really large companies and CTOs who were dealing with a lot of technical debt and a lot of, like, you know, large, slow moving teams, but wanted so desperately to be an example of, like, leading forward thinking tech, like, engineering teams, because they needed to hire good people. And they wanted to attract engineers who wanted to work for, like, technologically advanced, smart, forward-thinking companies. But they, you know, this is like Walmart, you know, where, like, moves a lot slower. And so I took a bunch of different ideas, went and called, like, a bunch of CTOs and engineers and said, does this make you barf? What would you think, you know, if we called ourselves this? Would you be like, ugh, you know, like, that's such a stupid buzzword. Some marketer thought of this. This is the stuff you have to do. Like, you have to test against, like, with real people. You have to find people who want to be like, oh, yeah, that seems like a good idea. That'll be like, oh, yeah, that's terrible. I fucking hate that. I went and called, you know, like, a bunch of our top customers and said, if we call ourselves an edge cloud platform, does that align with the language that you're using, that the way you think about what we do, bringing content closer to your end users? Does this align? And I got overwhelmingly positive feedback around that, which was really shocking to all of our technical leaders who thought that this was going to be really bullshitty. And so we changed it. Like, we changed everything. We did a full, like, flip every place that we call ourselves a content delivery network. We went out and we, you know, we asked our customers to start calling us this. We did, like, a full shift. And I never would have had the insight to know, like, how this aligned if I hadn't spent all of this time talking to our customers and asking them how they and their teams discussed this and why they bought it and why they advocated for it. So I think, you know, there's this element of, like, if you're a marketer, I'm a marketer who sells to marketers, I am very guilty of being like, I'm our target audience, so I know, you know, like, and I think you need to build this network of people around you, whether it's, you know, like, for me, I also use my peers. I have a lot of great folks that I can go to and gut check ideas, but also your customers themselves, to be able to go, like, oftentimes we make these assumptions around the product where we're like, this is intuitive, you know, like, this makes sense, someone will get this, and it's not, you know, like, I am biased because I've been in it too long. Like, I am coming from a different direction. So I, you know, there's tools popping up now where, you know, they're offering you access to, like, your buyer, and you can pay to go put your stuff in front of your buyers. The reason that works is because a lot of people don't fucking talk to their customers. And so they have to go pay to get access to their buyers. Like, talk to your customers. If you don't have an advocacy program, your executive should be, like, talking to your customers on a regular basis. You should have, like, customer advisors that you can go to. You should have relationships with these people. You should have a community you can go to and you can toss ideas into, and you can be like, does this make sense? Hey, can you, like, we put this button here. We launched this feature. We think it's super cute and cool. Does this make any sense? You know, does this light you up? Or are you like, what is this? This is, you know, this doesn't make sense.
That's such good advice. On the kind of, like, changing the name, so you got validation from customers, you realize, yeah, this is directionally correct. It's one thing to just change the copy that's on the homepage. It's another to have people actually adopt it, think it. How did brand cement that idea?
Yeah, that was a huge undertaking. So we changed all of the copy on the website. We also actually did some work around, like, you know, what people would consider classic brand, like, how do we show up? Because when I joined that company, when We free like 30 engineers. I think, you know, like someone's friend designed the logo. And, you know, it was like everyone was doing everything. When I joined, the engineers were helping me with marketing. Like they were helping me with everything. And which was good, you know, in a lot of ways, because I was getting direct feedback from people who understood the buyer. But we got to a threshold where it was like, okay, we're trying to go up market. We're going to rebrand and call ourselves an edge cloud platform. We're trying to define a new category and a new way of doing this. And we need to show up differently. And I also did go and talk to analysts, because we're going up market. So I wanted like analyst buy-in on this too. So what we ended up doing was like, you know, just streamlining and cleaning up a little bit. Like we redid the logo so that it could actually be used across multiple formats, because no one had thought of that when someone's friend designed it, you know. And we just thought a little bit more about like how do we present when we're selling to a buying committee of 20 people, you know, who have a brand team on their side and are used to a certain level of like professionalism. And then, you know, like I did a lot of, this is a lot of people talk about this right now as a challenge. And it is a lot of your job as a marketer is internal PR and internal education and internal repetition and internal assets and, creating one source of truth for everyone to go to and helping to give them a reason to go there. And feeding back information on why this is working. And so, you know, like I had to work with my sales team on like, yes, this is resonating. This is starting to work better. Feed that back into the business and go, this is working. We should all adopt this. You know, customer success team, talking to customers, getting the right language in their hands, helping do trainings, helping, you know, to like all hands multiple times, like explaining here's what we do and here's why we say it this way and here's how we show up. Having our customers come in to all hands even and talk about it. So it was like, you know, a lot of that. And then also, you know, at the time, I don't do much of this now, but I was doing a lot more traditional PR. We did a lot of like, we just went out and talked about and sort of let the reporters we've been working with know, this is how we're going to talk about ourselves and this is what we're doing. We're rebranding. I did this knowing I was going to get some really negative reactions and it was going to be interesting. And I like one of the first things that happened when I flipped the way that we talked about this and we flipped the website and we changed all our assets is someone from TechCrunch immediately wrote an article about how what an idiot basically I was and how this was like a hot pile of word garbage. You know, like what even is an edge cloud platform? This is just a pile of word garbage and trash. And I took it and framed it and we were like, we made it, you know, like someone hates this, someone hates this enough to write an article about it. And actually got us a lot of attention and I felt like it was validating in a way because we had made a strong enough bet on something that it could be hated. You know, like, I think you sort of have to expect that that's going to happen. When you make big moves like that. But, you know, that was not my target audience. My target audience was developers and I had already checked against it. So it just got us attention. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to do any sort of pivot where you expect a whole company to start changing the way that they talk or think about your brand and your company and your products, it takes a lot of repetition and training and work. And then positive reinforcement, because people are habitual.
I want to hit with the pivot piece, because that's really interesting. I think there's, you know, there's that old cliche that CMOs come in and the first thing they do is rebrand the company and change the website. And it's like, it's as tired as could be. But there's a kind of an, like, let's take Sendoso for an example. When you came into Sendoso, this is a company that has a lot of existing brand awareness, brand equity. It's got definitely positive associations. I'm sure you discover there were negative ones. How do you balance that sort of coming in as a leader where on one hand, you're in some cases a steward of the brand. Your job is to make sure you don't tank all of the stuff that was good about it. But then you also have to figure out what needs changing, and that delicate balance of telling people internally. Sometimes they feel it, sometimes they don't. How do you kind of, how do you work with the, what do I keep and preserve and what do I not?
At Sendoso, we were fairly well known, and I did a lot of sort of back channel research looking at the words that were used when we came up across, you know, like marketing communities and LinkedIn and places where people are talking about this kind of stuff, and sort of came in and held that against some of the assumptions we had internally. Some of it was good and some of it was not. And so I think one of the most important things that marketing can do is to become and to elevate the voice of the customer within a business. You can't come in and just go like, I don't like orange, so I'm gonna change this. You know, like it's annoying me to have to design my assets with this color palette, which is like something that was actually happening when I came in. Everyone said, we're so tired of these colors, can you change them? And I was like, I not my top priority at the moment, because it seems fine, you know, and it's not annoying our customers and it's not losing its deals. And so what I focused on was where are the places where we have assumptions about our brand on one hand, and they don't match with how we're actually perceived or the experience that our customers are having with us. And I think a lot of people think about brand in terms of like, yeah, when come in and flip the website, it doesn't look right, or like it's ugly. Things are ugly, or things, you know, aren't as polished as we want them to be, or, you know, I don't know, just classic like design stuff. That by itself is not brand. It's just design work. And I think if you don't nail the core part of, you know, do people consider us, are people experiencing us in a way that makes them want to work with us? Are we being represented as good people who care about our customers, who follow through, who are trustworthy, who have integrity? And are people seeing the value that we promise when they become a customer? You start there and you start to look at like what are the ways where we aren't delivering. That's not like classic brand, but like if you don't do that work and you just try and polish everything on top, it's not going to do anything. It's just bullshit. So like, that was the first thing I did, was like, there's some areas where we really need to do some like just small things we could fix that would improve the way that people experience Sendoso. And then we really thought about like, I got lucky. We had just done a values reexamination right when I came in and joined the company, and really focused on like, we believe that authentic real connection is at the heart of all good marketing and is important. And that's what Sendoso wants to embody, is connecting people in a way that is meaningful and delightful. And the way we go about that is curious and unboxed thinking. We want to craft our own path and North Star. We don't want to copy everything that has been done. And so we did a marketing exercise where we sort of pulled our values out and then thought about what does good marketing look like to us and how do we want to show up? And we sort of distilled down, like, we don't want to use buzzwords. We want to say what we mean. We want to do what we say. You know, we don't want to overcomplicate things. We want to be a model for simplified, you know, like getting out of the buyer's way and just adding value and delivering things that are useful and helpful. And we tried to just like make ourselves a very simple map for how we make decisions and how we prioritize something or we decide not to do it. And I have honestly put completely to the side, like, we need a new color palette, we need different fonts, we need whatever, because Sendoso is well known enough that I don't need to like mess with a lot of that stuff right now. It's the influencer program that where we handpicked people who embody the values that we stand for, and it's the agencies and freelancers and people we have chosen to pull into our circle to work with in the way that they think. It's the content we choose to create, the partners and other brands that we choose to craft experiences with, where I've really leaned in hard and tried to craft like this sort of overarching almost like glow of wherever we show up and whoever we're connected to, it feels good, because we are all aligned around doing the right thing for the right reasons and connecting people in ways that are useful and helpful and meaningful. That can be brand just as much as like your word mark, your logo mark, your landing pages, right? And I think you go from there. Like now I have earned the right to go look a little bit more at like our website experience and focus in on how could that look and feel better. But most people that I want to sell to, that I'm hoping will consider us at some point, are not on our website. And so, you know, we're doing a lot of like showing up in the world in various places and ways that I hope will help us be top of mind and have a positive association as credible, trustworthy, kind, smart people when they're ready to buy. And some of the work we're doing now, because we've actually done a pretty good job at this, in terms of just like being known and being known for the right reasons. The next layer to that is helping those buyers who have a positive association, because I've been in, you know, multiple rooms in the last 4 weeks where I say, oh, I work for Sendoso, and everyone smiles. And they're like, oh, you know, like the reaction is emotionally like stunning. Like people associate it with good. But the next level is, okay, how does that help me? And how does that serve my challenges? And when should I consider you? And that's what we're working on now.
That's incredible. I love the sort of like who you are surrounded by and who you partner with and how you choose to like build all of the capabilities is every bit as much of how you define the brand as anything. I completely agree with that. I love the people smiling in the room. That's such a tangible example. I couldn't talk about brand without talking about measurement to some degree. So these bets that you make, the things that you try to go, those smiles in the rooms that you're looking for, how long are you waiting to start to see signals? What are those kinds of signals that tell you we're on the right track, these things are working?
So there's sort of like loose and qualitative ways that I measure and feed this back. One of the most interesting ones is that, so we decided to craft, kind of handcraft an event strategy, and we decided to try and work with certain brands on that, brands that we felt were aligned with our values. And when we stood it up, it was a bit of work in terms of like, you know, reaching out to the right people and getting this all coordinated and getting people signed on and finding people wanted to sponsor something that had never been done before. In the like last few months since we started, you know, standing up what we call real retreats and doing more intentional, like discussion-oriented, connection-oriented events with partners, we've gone from we have to go out and find people to literally I cannot keep track of the amount of cool peers and brands that are wanting to do stuff with us. It's like something I can measure. And, you know, the amount of people who come into my DMs and who are messaging my team and saying, your marketing is inspiring to me. And I respect it. I had a woman that I really respect and admire, a peer at dinner, come up to me and hug me and say, I love what you're doing with your marketing. And it made me cry. I was like, wow, you know, like, so that's not like a typical in a dashboard measurement. But if you're selling to marketers, it is the best thing you could possibly do to become someone that marketers respect and admire and feel like we're doing things that actually unlock their ability to go advocate for that in their teams and at their companies, because marketers are struggling right now with the ability to get away from this like idea that we should just be capturing. It sounds so like tackling the buyer and like, you know, like sort of like forcing them into a pipeline number. So there's that element where I am just like, wow, I now have the, I'm so grateful I have the ability to work with all of these amazing, incredible people and brands because they respect what we're doing and I respect what they're doing, and it's very well aligned. There's these other elements in terms of like, you know, are we seeing more of the right people engaging with us? Are they coming to our events? Are they talking about our events afterward? Are they sharing that they thought they that those were valuable for them? Are we seeing more of the right people come to our website and engage with our content? Are we seeing that more folks are coming in through word of mouth? Are we seeing more folks coming in through like organic channels and LinkedIn DMs and, you know, heard about you from, this is all self, a lot of self-reported attribution, but heard about you from X. In fact, yes, we are. Like our partners are referring us business. People are hearing about us from different companies and brands and leaders that we work with. I do this for a lot of the brands that I partner with and tools that I use. They're starting to do it for us. And so there's this sort of like, I hate the word flywheel, but it's like, you know, this is a different way. It is more handcrafted and it is harder because it's the right way to do it, in my opinion. But you can't just be like, I'm going to hack my website and I'm going to hack these landing pages and I'm going to make them like, you know, so optimized, you know, that I'm going to capture all of these people. That's not the way it works. Like, that's the end of the process, is just having the right places for people to go if they are in market, they like you, they've heard about you from people they trust. We're moving more and more in the direction of like, people are buying. I buy almost everything based on someone I trust told me that they liked it. At this point, that is my number one way I purchase or decide to work with someone else. And I think many of us are in that camp. And so, you know, we have to consider this is how humans are making decisions, because the internet is increasingly unreliable. The things brands say are increasingly unreliable. Everywhere on LinkedIn, it's like, how to hack this, how to get 110% of that, like conversion rates, like, you know, are like guaranteed, blah, 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 supercharge your pipeline, right? Like, I glaze over now. I'm like, did you like the person that you worked with there? Like, were they a good person? Do they seem smart? You know, like, how do they think about things? And like, does it seem like they understand like people? It's sort of like my first indicator for should I work with or buy from someone. And so I just think we've gotten a little too tied up in like, I do measure pipeline. That is how my team is gold. I measure meetings booked and, you know, like qualified opportunities that sales feels like are, you know, in market and have high intent and are ready to buy. How do I get people to that point? It's like all of these other factors of, you know, they may see an ad that we create that's weird and cool, but is not designed to capture them. And they may see five other ads, and they may see a LinkedIn post, and they may see, you know, like someone else who attended an event saying this was an exceptional event and I love these people. And like all of that is happening. There are like 70 touch points now before someone converts and decides that they want to take an actual call, because we're vetting harder. You know, like we don't want to just like go take a demo with someone and waste our time.
I couldn't think of a more perfect place to end this. That is a mic drop speech. Every word. I love every word. I want to leave it there. I want to be respectful of the time. That was so good. Casey, thank you so much. This was such a fun conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Love this topic.